Messiah's Branch Broadcast, a one-hour prophecy program on the American Voice Radio Network, featuring Pastor Dan of Messiah's Branch Ministry. And now, here's Pastor Dan.
Greetings, saints, and welcome to the Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour. We are broadcasting live from the Flint Hills of Kansas, and we're on the American Voice Radio Network. Today's date is August 24th, 2017. Saints, the world is in turmoil. Most just don't realize that, but we are in that time of the end, and that's the time before Messiah's glorious return. So it's time to get out of sin, the world, and look to the holy city. Look to the one who suffered and died for you. Hear the sound of the shofar. Heed the warning. Get right now before it's too late. Please make this choice tonight. If you need help after this program, call me. I'll pray for you or with you. If you get the machine, please leave your name, your number, your prayer request, and or message. The phone number, of course, is 620-878-4682. And an emergency, my cell phone number is 316-619-4886. Now, you can always find updates with the breaking news, the Wichita Mission Church, radio program archives, contact information, all at our ministry hub, which is very simply prophecyhour.com. prophecyhour.com. Remember, you can always send prayer requests by United States Postal Service and by email with your return address and phone number so we can contact you. The request will be taken to Wichita Mission Church anointing, which will be prayed over and sent back to you at your request with no solicitations for donations. Or as my wife says, we just lose your address. We are a national satellite radio program, which is simulcast live on the net internationally, live on YouTube, and on some FM stations, so pray about supporting airtime. On another note, let's thank our listener base in places like Incheon, South Korea, Athens, Greece, Auckland, New Zealand, Santo Domingo, Dominican Republic, Mumbai, India, Vancouver, Canada, and, of course, cities in the good old USA, such as Seattle, Washington, Washington, D.C., Arlington, Texas, Charlotte, North Carolina, and Toledo, Ohio, as well as Wichita, Kansas, which remains the largest group of listeners to our radio programs, at least when they go to podcasts later on tonight. Now, prayer, and we'll bring on tonight's guest. Dear Heavenly Father, in Yeshua HaMashiach's name, I pray. Father, we lift up, first off, all the people in Texas and other states that have been affected by this terrible storm. Father, I do pray it helps bring the country back together, but you know the divine reason for it to happen. Father, I also pray that radio tonight goes according to your will and not my will, nor our guest's will. And please give everyone out there ears and wits to hear the truth. Anyway, folks, tonight we have the American way. Independence, liberty has been under assault for decades. The cultural foundations of the United States and its institutions are developing along the line of some futuristic apocalyptic novel and producing social, moral, and economics dry rot that can only lead to chaos and ruin. Our guest today will speak with us as we speak with him about his new book due to be published by WorldNet Daily Books on September 5th, 2017. The book is called Crushing the Collective, The Last Chance to Keep America Free and Self-Governing. This book illuminates the very real dangers of socialist mindset that is currently threatening Americans' freedoms and the very existence of our great nation. As Benjamin Franklin said, when the people find that they can vote themselves money, that will herald the end of the republic. Therefore, we must know the destructive history of nations drawn to the collective deceit, or will we be doomed to follow their path? Our guest, Charles W. Sasser, has been a full-time freelance writer, journalist, photographer since 1979. He's a veteran of both the United States Navy, he's a journalist, and a U.S. Army Special Forces, the Green Berets, a combat veteran and former combat correspondent, wounded in action. And right now I want to say, Charles, we thank you for your service. We appreciate you. He also served 14 years as a police officer in Miami, Florida, and in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where he was a homicide detective. He's taught at universities, lectured nationwide, traveled extensively throughout the world. He's published over 2,500 articles and short stories in magazines ranging from Guidepost, Parents, Christian Life, Soldier of Fortune, True West, and Writer's Digest. He is a contributing author of more than 60 books and more than 3,000 magazine articles. All I can say now is just welcome, Charles. Glad to have you here with me.
Well, thank you. This Reverend Dan?
Yeah, this is Pastor Dan.
Yeah, Pastor Dan. Thank you very much. I'm privileged to be here with you.
Well, it's a real privilege. You know, I caught your name and I thought I recognized it, and they had sent me a free copy of your book, the new book, by PDF, and I misplaced it in my computer, and I found it earlier, and I'm just stunned. This book, I believe, after looking, going through it today, this book is going to be, should be the number one book for America that I can think of for some time.
Well, you know, Pastor Dan, I think what we're living through right now, we've got three steps, I think, facing us. We've got probably in the history of the United States, this is the biggest threat that we've had to the United States ever. So we have a challenge facing us. And what that challenge is what I try to outline. And can we overcome it? That's the big question. You see, I think what we're living through now is a cultural, political, and economic decline, not only of the United States, but of Europe as well. Look at what's happening to Europe, for example. It's just about down the tube. But the thing is, Pastor Dan, that this challenge has challenged every empire throughout history. I'm a historian. I teach history part-time. So you can go back to every empire in history. Rome, you know, Persia, you know, just, let's go to Germany.
Right.
Let's look at Venezuela today. It's gone through the same decline. And according to Alexander Titler, or Tyler, he's referenced both ways, but I think it's Titler. Yeah, I'm sure you've heard of the tyranny liberty cycle, through which every cycle goes. Every empire has gone through this same cycle. You know, we go from bondage to courage. We get the courage, let's say, like in the Revolutionary War, we got the courage to fight back.
Right.
We have spiritual faith. We have this spiritual faith. Look at our founding fathers, although it's almost trying to be erased by modern culture. The spiritual faith arose, and out of that spiritual faith came liberty. But then now look. Then we had abundance, more abundance than any other nation in history. And then we had complacency. People sit back and just, you know, look how many people even vote today. Apathy. Dependency. When we got almost half of the Americans now indebted to the government for their largesse, for their livelihood.
Yeah.
I mean, when you get dependency, you own a person. You own people.
Sure.
You create dependency. I mean, look at our Indian. I'm a quarter Creek Indian, and I lived on the reservation in the Four Corners, and they have a whole reservation, and things like. Drunkard. I mean, just alcoholism was just rampant. This society has completely been destroyed. Why? Because it's dependent upon the U.S. Let's look at Detroit. Look at Baltimore. Look at Chicago, L.A. I was a cop in Miami, Florida. I mean, it's not like I'm just working theories on a lot of this stuff. I've been there.
Right.
I worked salt and pepper teams in Miami, Florida during the 60s. Salt and pepper, a black cop and a white cop working ghettos, which had one of the highest crime rates in the nation at the time. This was in the 60s. Now, most people don't realize that early in the 60s, statistically, there was very little difference between the black culture and the white culture when it came to such things as jobs, same job, out of wedlock, pretty much the same, crime rate, pretty much the same. What happened? Dependency. Dependency. And then what happened back on the plantation? The bondage. So, you know, throughout history, Pastor, throughout history, mankind has evolved away from individualism toward the collective. Toward the collective.
Right.
It's always toward the collective. Probably the freest persons we ever had were the early pastoral peoples. If you didn't like something, what was going on in your community, you packed your atlatl and gathered up your wives and kids and you left.
Right.
But
there's
always some place to go. Columbus, you know, Columbus provided some place to go. And we left and started through that same cycle.
Let me bring in something here real quick before we get too far on, because you pointed it out. I was going to save it till later. In your book, you compare the USA with Rome's final days, saying people were so distracted by social decadence, hedonism, I don't even know how to pronounce that one, materialism, corruption, and rejection of basic truths that they failed to notice their rights and liberties were being dismantled. No one remembered and stood up for their foundational values. Rome suffered from excesses which led to laziness, which led to the loss of individual freedom. And now even the tech companies are talking about giving everybody a basic income. This is what is destroying us. This is just like Rome. Back to you.
Oh, it is exactly like Rome. Okay, listen, the thing with the so-called political correctness and cultural, just the whole thing of political correctness. This should effectively be called Marxist. Should be effectively called Marxism and cultural Marxism. Let's look at some of the things that have happened here. You know, we've always okay. Let's look at Frankfurt School. The challenge that's facing us now is that in the 1919, I believe it was, a couple of characters named Lucas and Gramsci were Marxists. And they said that socialism could never come to a country like the United States unless we first destroy all Christian Western culture and destroy its sexual mores. What they recommended was a long march through the institutions that would take decades to take over our institutions. And let's look at what did Hillary Clinton during the presidential campaign, she said, she went along with this same thing, take over the institutions. She says, deep-seated cultural codes, religious beliefs, and structural biases have to be changed. I mean, it goes on and on. So if then when it was 1935, Columbia University, the Frankfurt School, moved first from Germany. You know, they're having international warfare between the commies and the fascists, but there's not a penny's worth of difference between them. They all end up the same place. They're both socialists. They end up exactly the same place. So 1935, Frankfurt School moved to Columbia University. In the 1960s, a character there named Marcuse, and he says that, how does this fit today? He says, we must have toleration from the left, but intolerance from the right. Look, you get these characters, Antifa and all these characters, they go out there. You ever hear anything about them? But you get a handful of white racists or you know, this kind of thing, and first thing you think, they're taking over the country when there's nobody, when the real threat comes from the Antifa and those kinds of people.
Right.
Well, at any rate, Marcuse, he says, what will happen in order to make the United States fall towards socialism is a long march to infiltrate all its institutions or destroy them. Now, what have we been doing since the 1960s? Let's look at Christianity. Let's look at Christianity for a second. Well, let's go back to FDR. He said he believed in convergence. This long march to the institutions, what he said was convergence, that way back then, 1920s. Convergence, that socialism and capitalism would converge and become a mixture of both. Well, the thing is, you cannot mix socialism. It eventually will overcome But anyway, Mark Hu says this, take a long march to infiltrate. Education, let's look at our education, Pastor. We got safe places. We got all these people who refuse to listen to anyone who has an opinion different from their own. They will riot, break windows, everything else to keep people from free speech. And what I liked, Cheryl Atkinson wrote a great book recently. And what she says is that we people, because of this, because of political correctness and self-censorship, that we refuse to employ free speech to fight against all this. And as a result of our declining to free speech, we have essentially given up the stage to what are essentially fascists. I mean, let's face it, Trump's not fascist. These handful of white guys who were marching and were beaten up by the anti-fa, those people felt posed no threat. They have no power. They have no funding. You look to the other side, look at the funding they get from everybody from George Soros on up, in which I outline the book where all this funding comes from. And the whole idea is to infiltrate Christianity. We got to destroy Christianity. I got one example I love from that. In 2012, when Obama was nominated for a second term, the DNC, Democratic National Committee, they took God out of the platform. And when someone proposed that they put God back in the platform, the entire stadium booed the idea of putting God in the platform. Now, look, a few months later, there was a prayer at an abortion rally, and they prayed to God for God to help on abortions. Now, you see, we've coordinated things. I call it cultural insanity, right? I wrote a book several years ago called Cultural Insanity.
Oh, you did? Really?
Yeah, cultural insanity, the wacky world of cultural madness.
I'll have to look that one up, for sure.
Yeah, we are definitely mad. I was audited 2 years in a row. And I said, why? I couldn't figure out why. And then Bill O'Reilly, on the O'Reilly Factor on Fox News, he was audited those same 2 years. So he did an investigation. And he discovered that there were hundreds of conservative writers and journalists who have been audited those same 2 years for no reason. The auditor who audited me the second time, 1 year, then second year, of course I had all of her, everything all in order, and right. She was a cop's wife. And she called me and said, this will be a telephone interview. I know why they're doing this. What they're doing it for was to shut up anybody who opposed.
Right.
And I'm firmly convinced of it. And Bill O'Reilly was firmly convinced of it. So,
let me come in a minute. You know, absolutely. There's been we've seen it in the schools. We're talking about Christianity right now, but you know, that I saw that come about. You know, in the '60s when Johnson gave the churches the 501c, called the Johnson Amendment, and made churches into corporations. And when they made them into corporations, they put the state in charge of the church, and they went against political speech. And so, you know, it seems that from the '60s, this has been I call it a downhill march for Christianity and an uphill march for communism, because isn't that just what this is anyway? It's just blatant communism come home to roost. Back to you.
Yes, Pastor. Let's take a look at the last election with Bernie Sanders, and look at how many young men. He could have been president. Except, you know, the Hillary campaign kind of pushed him out of the way. But he's an avowed Marxist. Avowed Marxist. He honeymooned in Moscow during the Cold War. This man's an avowed, and he could have won. He had a very good chance of winning the presidency, an avowed Marxist. And that's because like 55% of American young people view socialism favorably. But, Rev, if you look at the definition, you look at Marx's definition himself. Socialism is that transition between capitalism and communism. That's all it is. It's not meant for long term. It's yes, But we're afraid to say communist anymore. We had all that anti-communist movement, where if you were anti-communist, you were a bigot, you were so forth and so on. Same thing we've got now. We had that in the 60s during the Cold War. And it just goes on. So let's call it what it is. Yes, it's communism. It's communism. Let's call it Marxism. Call it progressivism. But if we look at the history of progressivism, we can see that long march going on throughout the political institutions. One of the institutions that must be captured. Now,
right.
Who was it? Marcuse, I think. Marcuse says that we will now look at the liberal wing of the Democratic Party to support socialism, to support our agenda. And he was a Marxist, of course. But we're going to look at the liberal wing, the progressive wing of the Democratic Party to support the approach of socialism. I mean, how much clearer can you get that of what is occurring in this nation? And
it's pretty much, well, you know, the spooky thing is that, you know, going back to the Rome thing, you know, it said that people were so busy with entertainment and all these other things that they didn't notice that their freedoms were taken away. I think that's kind of where Christianity has, you know, Christians have gotten. They're so occupied with everything, and the pastor's not talking about it. And so it allows this to happen, whereas the pastors used to be the ones that screamed about it, but no longer. Then the schools have been taken over slowly. And it's just getting worse and worse dramatically.
Oh yes. I call it religious decay. I call it decay throughout our society. Well, look, let's compare a few things. One of the things of Rome's downfall was barbarians at the gate. And what happened was that they began to use foreigners for the work that they refused to do. They begin to look to foreigners as essentially taking care of their army, becoming soldiers. They begin to depend upon barbarians, and pretty soon the barbarians at the gate, and we're taking over.
We're going to have to stop right there because we've got to go to a station break. And, folks, you can go to charlessasser.com, or you can go over to our pastor's page, and you'll find all the links that you need to his book and his websites and everything. And did I miss one? Or Charles, is there anything you'd like to tell him to contact you, or just go to WorldNet Daily or something?
Yeah, go to WorldNet Daily. They can always find the book there.
Okay, folks, the book will be at, you can pre-order the book right now. It's called Crushing the Collective. And let me tell you, this is a dynamite book. And, you know, this could actually save America if we could get the right people to read it. We'll be back, folks, in 3 minutes.
Pastor Dan will be right back.
We're back. This is Pastor Dan Catlin, and you're listening to Messiah's Branch Prophecy Hour on the American Voice Radio Network. We'll play about supporting radio airtime, so that's also what supports the Wichita Mission Church. Talk radio is all about warning you, as today, of things that are about to overtake our country and the whole earth, for that matter. But we do really need your help. As you know, this ministry sells nothing, so we need you to donate to radio and if you donate to radio, please let us know that the donation is for radio and not for the Wichita Mission Church, as we do try to keep them separate. Remember, support us so we can care for the people that the Father sends us. Men, women, children from all walks of life come to us for all kinds of help. We get no help from any organized churches or government agencies. We do not want the government telling us what to do. It's only folks like you that supported us that we're now in our 18th year that make the Wichita Mission Church. We care and minister people to a part of town that most people don't even like to drive to after dark. But we're there. But where else should the body of Messiah be but among the sinners, as Yeshua was? So we need your help to continue to stay open and to continue bringing you these great interviews. So why do so many people come to us for help? Because, you know, we are all small. Well, love is the answer, because they're treated like family. Second, beyond like that, we don't have any guideline-like programs. The only programs we have are talk radio programs. People walk in the door and ask for what they need, and if we don't have a way to do it, we pray it in, but we try to fill their need right then and there. This is why even the agencies tell their employees about the Father's Little Mission Church. You see, when guidelines stop them from helping, they send people to us. People who have millions of dollars in their budget send people to a place that really has no budget. We are the last hope for so many, and we are responsible to care one for another, as we are our brother's keepers. All donations, no matter what size, helps. And the Father notices all donations that come from where? Your heart. If you don't wish to help with the poor, again, consider a donation for the radio airtime, as it's not free, and donations keep us on the air. You can donate online or by mailing a check or money order, and you can find all this information at prophecyhour.com. prophecyhour.com. And now we're back with Charles Sasser talking about his new book, Crushing the Collective. Are you with us, Charles?
I sure am, Pastor.
Amen. Go ahead. I was just going to remind the folks where we were at, but you can. Go ahead.
Okay, yeah. When compelling, I want to get to, you know, what we can do before we run out of time. But
okay.
When compelling Rome's final days to America's final days, and what I'm really doing, I'm not just comparing America to Rome. I'm comparing America to all the civilizations that have preceded us and have gone through this same tyranny liberty cycle. Every one of them. There's none that has escaped it. So we can look at ourselves and say, no other history, no other empire has escaped it. How can we? So in comparing them, I'm just looking at it when we talk about religious decay, pleasure and entertainment. I mean, this is a thing with barbarians and immigrations, which Rome did. Inflation, that was one of the reasons for the falls of Rome. Taxation, high taxation. Look what's happening here. We spend more money. The average person in America spends more money on taxes than he does on food and clothing. So that's high taxing that happened in Rome. We talked about welfare. In Rome's last days, there were 300,000 able-bodied men on the public dole. They could work, but refused to work. Now look at lost history. Rome lost its history. It refused to look at, now what's happening in America. We're tearing down statues. We want to tear down Washington. Anything. We want to tear down the Declaration of Independence. We're renaming anything that's offensive to our poor petunias. And it goes on and on. But you see, I think what's happened, I think George Orwell, 1984, was really prescient. He's one of my favorite authors, especially 1984. Now look, how well does this, and what he published in that 1946 or 47, something he published in 1984. But anyway, I like this quote. I keep it above my desk. Especially now in these days when we can see what's happening with tearing down the statues, renaming everything in the world, being offended by everything. George Orwell wrote, every record has been destroyed or falsified. Every book rewritten. Every picture has been repainted. Every statue and street building has been renamed. Every date has been altered. And the process is continuing day by day and minute by minute. History has stopped. Nothing exists except an endless present in which the party is always right.
Wow.
He could be talking about 2017.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And the things that are occurring here. Well, look what we've done to the family. Let's start. You know, she says, bizarre, the first thing you are is that you're a homophobe. You're racist. That's how they keep you from saying anything. That's why we're 46 in the world when it comes to freedom of speech and press. And that's like Cheryl Atkinson said, that's because of political correctness and because we self-censor and refuse to speak out. I will speak out. Because I think if we don't speak out, we're lost. But I'm going to give some factors here very shortly on what we can do if it's not too late.
No, it's not too late.
Yeah, I hope not. I hope you're right, Pastor. I hope it's not too late. But family.
Let me say this.
Family. Sure.
Let me just throw one thing in real quick. I'm in total agreement with you that there's some things that we could do, and this I want to say to the people, and I've been saying it for years now, the men of God, the real Christians, the real men that are left out there before there's not any real men left, you need to stand up and you need to speak against this and you need to listen to what Charles is telling you and about to tell you. Okay, Charles, back to you.
Yes, that's the most important thing is to speak up. Like, for example, gay marriage. You cannot speak against gay marriage because then you're a homophobe or so forth. And when the President of the United States paints the White House in rainbow colors, you know that something's weird. And I don't care what you say. I have nothing against. I don't discriminate against any man or any person. I don't discriminate. But I don't want them to discriminate against me. We have a saying. I grew up in the mountains. I grew up in the Ozark Mountains. And we have a saying there that as long as, hey, live the life you want to live, but when you step on my fence, then you're intruding. Then I have a right to do something about it. So we destroyed a family. Now we've got such things as transgenderism, communal bathrooms. I mean, insanity. It's cultural insanity. But if you say anything about it, guess what? And you talk about men no longer men? Well, look at our men. I call it wussification. These men are just becoming, they're becoming sissies. They're afraid to be men because they're taught in the first grade, if not, you're given Ritalin or something else. Our boys are all given Ritalin in order to calm them down. So they can not to calm them down. They're being boys, for Pete's sake. But we don't know how to take care of them. Okay, let me see. I don't know how much time we got left here, but what can we do? How successful is this supposed to be in the march through the institutions? Look around us. What we're experiencing right now is a silent coup, attempted silent coup. And believe it, it is well organized. And if you look, I explain in my book, I explain how Barack Obama was funded by George Soros, his campaign, for example. Hillary Clinton's campaign was funded by George Soros.
Right.
This man is an insidious, he's like a guy out of, 007 movie. I mean, like a bad guy out of a 007 movie. So he's wringing his hands.
You're absolutely right. Let me say this about Soros real quick. Actually, and I actually broke in and tell you we got 15 minutes left, brother. But yes, yeah, that's what I thought about George Soros and still think about this guy I've been talking about for years. Is he reminds me of one of those sinister characters in a James Bond movie that's out to take over the world. Back to you.
Yes. Oh, yes. And the thing, I did a lot of research, I outlined. And not only that, but our institutions in political institutions, and I list a bunch of the political institutions that are involved in that Socialist International, Progressive Party. Yeah, well, look at Progressive Party a little closer. Progressive Democrats of America, the Congressional Progressive Caucuses. Look at how many people in there are socialists and Marxists. Nobody wants to do that because it's politically incorrect to say anything about it. But it goes on and on. Well, what can we do? What can we do? Well, Newt Gingrich, I kind of admire Gingrich. He's one of the very few politicians I do admire. Matter of fact, I was speaking at a CPAC here last year. And, I'm very much for term limits. You cannot have these people go up there and stay forever because then they become part of the swamp. And they're not for America. They're for themselves privately. But I made a remark the next day I advocated term limits. And the next day a radio interviewed me, and I made a remark that 99% of all politicians give 1% a bad name. And so you can imagine how popular I am with politicians. But Newt Gingrich made this remark. He says that it's almost impossible to retake cultural institutions once they have been overcome, which they have been overcome in our country. He said one or the other must win. Either freedom must win or tyranny must win. And I was a combat correspondent in Latin America all during the 80s. And I saw all these things happening down there when we had, you know, Marxism was taking over many of the countries down there, especially Nicaragua.
Right.
I tell real stories about that, but I've had a lot of stories to tell. But anyway, he said, one or the other must win. Well, there was a guy named, I forgot his name, not offhand. I got it in my book someplace. But he said that he advocated one of the ways to fight back. Are we still on, Pastor?
Yeah, we're still on. I'm just listening to
you. Oh, okay. Got quiet. Okay. And he said it was retro culture. That was one of the, he was advocating, he said that was the only way that we could resist tyranny and socialism was retro culture. And what he meant by that is that we must retake certain values from a previous age. You know, it was my great pleasure to have lived through one of the last really American phases of history in the 1950s before the 60s overtook it. But
yeah.
We had certain values then. You know, everything was low. Our out-of-wedlock rate was low. The family was reverent. People went to church. We had all these values were reverent. And this guy
right.
says, well, unless we retroculture and retake these values and begin to express them in our churches, in our daily lives and speak out. Well, look, I just read recently, last week, I just read that there's a church that celebrates with marijuana, for example.
Really?
And, yeah, I mean, isn't that insane?
That's insane.
Then we have churches for gays. And I said, yeah, gays should go to church, but we shouldn't have a church that lauds gayness. Because it doesn't say in the Bible, it says in the Bible, you know, that it's against God. That's against nature. Any way you look at it, it's against nature. I'm an old cowboy. And, I grew up with animals, grew up in the Ozarks. I was a rodeo cowboy, and I lived with all these things.
Yeah.
And I kept saying, no, it's good. Oh, I want to tell this story real quick here. In 2016,
go ahead, you got 2 minutes.
Okay, in 2015, there was a meeting in New York City. And it was made up of sociologists, politicians, et cetera, et cetera. All the cultural elite of the nation. And what they did is they assembled, and the purpose of this convention was to determine how to save the planet, And they came up with the idea that they must reduce the population immediately, in which they said 3 billion people must die immediately. And then discussion went around to how do we do this? Do we draw lotteries? Do we just, you know, how do we do this? And these people were serious about this. They were dead serious about eliminating people. There's an old saying that, and I can see it now, with this thing of changing names, toppling statues, you know what comes next?
Hmm.
Burning books. Burning
yeah.
books. We're going to see burning books. And there was a German during Hitler era, just before World War II, when they were burning all the books, and he said, because they were offensive, and we're already doing similar to that now. With like Huckleberry Finn, which is censored from many schools, and it's being on the internet, the e-books, it's being rewritten to in order to take out anything offensive. A lot of our books are going to do that, and on the internet, they will destroy our history in a sense. So the point, yeah, I'm very passionate about this. I guess you can see I've done a lot of. I've done a lot of speeches and so forth on this, so I'm very passionate about this, and I kind of get carried away. But he said, this German, he said, a people who will burn books will eventually burn people. Now, I predict in the United States, we're only seeing the beginning we're only seeing the beginning. I was a cop in Miami, Florida, 1968 during the rioting, when Richard Nixon was nominated on Miami Beach for the Republican presidency.
Right.
We had the rioting, 3 days of rioting, 5 people killed. I can't remember how many. At the end of that, I mean, I saw this burned buildings, all burned. You know, looting the whole bit. Had 13 bullet holes in my police car after it was all over, and I ended up in the hospital as well last night because of a gunfight. But it's nothing. I saw it then what was happening, and I was trying. I was writing articles and so on. I said, "This is what's going to happen." And of course, nobody listened to this to you back then. But it's going to be twice that bad now. This is not going to stop. Newt Gingrich is right. We're not going to retake cultural institutions. One or the other must win. And our only hope is to crush this idea of the collective of socialism. And
Let me ask you this. Looking at the last election and what's going on in America, you know, while I expected this, I didn't expect the violence and the things to come so quickly. I think that they seem like they're you know, coming out quicker than they were going to. Had Hillary been elected, we would have seen a lot of things and squelched and things changed. But isn't this what we're seeing, a reaction of all those leftists, the communists, against Trump trying to reverse and crush the collective, so to speak? Back to you.
Well, I think part of it is. But I think the election, let's look. What we had, let's look at Ronald Reagan. I had some hope then. I was in the Army, I was Special Forces Run Mission then. And I had some hope for Ronald Reagan. And I said, yes, he's going to change it. He did, he changed it. You know, we began to, a shining city on the hill. We began to have faith in America again. And then what happened? You know, what happened? Eventually we end up with Clinton, and we end up with Obama. Obama, who made this remark, if you remember it, I think in 2008, that we are only 2 days away from the fundamental transformation of America. What we're doing and what we're seeing now is this fundamental transformation. And this goes all the way back to Marcuse. Well, it goes back, we go further back than that. We go back to 1918, 1920. But let's go back to Marcuse in the 1960s when he's talking about the Long March to the Institution. This is what Obama was talking about, the fundamental transformation of America. And he called it baby steps in order to make people equal. And I just heard on the radio today.
You know, it's amazing, just real quick, to me it's amazing that, you know, out of the so many lies that Obama said, is that he said he straight out wanted to fundamentally change America, and everybody cheered him for it. They didn't know what they were asking for, but he was being truthful. He changed America. Back
he was.
To you.
He was. And he was. He said, and it was like, I think the Trump is like Reagan. He stepped in at a time. But you see, Pastor, the thing is, Reagan was successful in what he did. But then as soon as he was gone, the march to the institutions continued. And I think we're going to see the same thing now. No, I don't think there's as much a reaction against Trump as it is against America. The idea that, well, they've gone through all the institutions, they've got the institutions. Now, Obama said, now is our time. Yes, now is their time. They think that they have the upper hand, that they can change America socialist, make America socialist. And I think they're going to do that. I think they're going to do that because we don't fight back. We're afraid to say anything because of political correctness, you know, like Cheryl Atkinson said.
Okay, well, then I got to ask this question. And this is an important question because, you know, I really don't know. I and even producer of this program's got his own radio talk program. In fact, I got it from him a long time ago. I think America's stuck so far in the mud, I don't know if we are going to get pushed out or get out. Do you think that we could possibly get out of this? Back to you.
Well, I'm going to look at history. And I haven't known the nation. I teach history part-time at the community college. And I was once director of criminal justice at American Christian University. And, well, I was a cop, isn't it? And,
right.
I look back historically, and any society that allows itself to come this far down, and they've all done that. Did they come back? Well, they didn't disappear, but they disappeared as it would know. You know, we still have Italy, for example, but it has nothing like the grandeur of Rome. And we have Persia. And, you know, Iran is attempting to reestablish itself. But they weren't anything like they were when they were Persians. They went through the same decline. Everyone again, and the only thing I can look at is to say, well, okay, we've come this far. Do we have a chance? And I don't want to be, I want to be realistic. I just have to be realistic. I'm a historian. And I try to stand back and I look at this. I look at what's happened before. And I look what's happening now with the insanity. And I say, you know, I want to be pessimistic. I want to believe that Trump may be another Reagan, that we may have a chance. But then I look at this resistance. Like Newt Gingrich says, once they own the cultural institutions, it's near impossible to regain them. And if they own the Christian, if they own all the institutions, including many of our churches right now,
right.
If they do that, we can't retake them. If we can't crush this idea of the collective, which we can't, because look, people want everything. I was an undercover journalist on Occupy Wall Street in New York. Nobody knew I was a journalist, so I was just hanging out there with these you know snowflakes, these petunias,
right.
And most of them college. And I've never seen such a dumb collection of people. I mean, these people were stupid. They had no idea what they were asking for. All they were asking for was, you know, walk around with signs. Oh, free transportation, free housing, free food, free, you know, free everything. Who's going to pay for this? I had. Well, the rich. You know, the government will pay for it. Equality. You know, Obama comes out and he says, this is our future. He was talking about Occupy Wall Street. This is our future. And all I could say was, mine, if they are our future, it's a dark future indeed. And frankly, Pastor, they may be our future. And if they are, I think we're looking at very, very black days, very dark days ahead, in which I think we're looking at something, we're looking at something like a Great Depression, only much worse. Because we're going to collapse. This nation will collapse unless we get unless we take charge of, first of all, our national debt, unless we take charge of the fact that, hey, our people are demanding free things. And look at what happened to Greece recently, or a couple years ago, that once you try to take away from them, because they have to, they'll go broke. And they try to take away gratuities from the people, they rioted and everything else. You see, your free things, it's almost impossible. You take dependency, it's almost impossible. Once you're dependent, like pigs at a trough, they know they're going to get fed, and they're going to be at that trough squealing and fighting to get what's theirs. The heck with the pig pen or anything else. And I think we've become hogs at the trough. And once we've got this point, look how many independent people you actually see around you anymore. Just talk to people. Say, well, I have some friends of mine right now. Of course, I retired from the military for 29 years, active in reserve service. And, you know, of course, I did certain benefits like health care, because that's part of my payment, that was part of my wages. But I have friends of mine who served 2 years or something in the military, and they would say, well, I'm getting hard hearing. They say to me, well, the VA will give you free hearing aids. I said, nothing free. Why should I? I'm not going to the VA to get free hearing aids. I'm not taking anything. Let me give you one example. We were so poor when I grew up that poverty would step up. We lived in the dirt floor chicken house at one time. We lived in an old barn. We lived in tin roof shacks. And my dad could neither read nor write. But we had independence. We had pride. We refused to take charity from anything or anybody. One year we must have been particularly hard at. It was the best lesson I've ever learned in my life. And my dad said, we'll take Gimpy groceries. We call them Gimpy groceries, government surplus commodities. Go down and sign up at the county barn, and they give you some cheese, beans, you know, that kind of thing. But he was too proud to go. And I'm 12 years old, he sent me down. I've always been a scrapper. I'm an ex-kickboxer, professional kickboxer in the box.
and out of the scrapper when I was a kid. So I'm back to Barnes, 12 years old, and one of the men who worked there, one of the governor's boys, pushed me for some reason. And I was ready to fight. This guy says, boy, if the government feeds you, it'll do what it damn well pleases.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's the best I've ever learned in my life. I'll take nothing.
I'm going to have to cut in it there because we really came to the end of our program, but I didn't want to let you not put that in as it is in your book, folks. The folks, the book is called Crushing the Cleft. You know, I really, really enjoyed this program, and I'd like to get a chance to talk with you again sometime, and so I'll be in contact. But you be blessed, brother, and thanks so much for being on. And I'll tell the folks where to get your book.
God bless you, too.
All right. God bless. Bye-bye. Folks, you go to the pastor's page. You'll find all the links to find the book. It's called Crushing the Collective, or you can truly WorldNet Daily, Crushing the Collective, and you'll find it. But remember, there is only one God. He is your father. He's the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. His son is Yeshua HaMashiach. He gave his life for repented sins. He rose after 3 days and three nights in the heart of the earth. And through him, and only through him, is the way to the Father. Lord our God, Father, King Universe, ask in Yeshua HaMashiach's name that the Father blesses and keeps you, and his face shines upon you, and is gracious to you, and gives you peace like no one or nothing else can. Until an hour from now, this is Pastor Dan saying goodbye and shalom.
You've just heard the Messiah's Branch broadcast featuring Pastor Dan. To contact Dan on the internet, go to messiahsbranch.org. To write to Dan, send a note to Messiah's Branch, 230 West 4th Street, Florence, Kansas, 66851. Tune in next time for Messiah's Branch.